completely accurate. He's exactly the type that ends up as a general manager.
We're not talking about me here.
We're not talking about Tim or anybody in this room, by the way. No one in this room is the type who ends up as a general manager. I'm really not even the type who's supposed to end up as a program director. There's just no one else.
How did that happen?
There is no one else. I'm sort of the Harry Anderson of the program director. If you were a fan of Night Court, which I know you were, you remember that's how... his name wasn't Harry Anderson on the show, though. It was Harry something or other. There was that whole... that period of sitcoms where you would have the same first name as, but the last name was different. What the hell was his name on Night Court? Harry Brown? No, that's the libertarian guy. Well, whatever. But there was that episode of Night Court where he was, like, locked in an elevator or something with Marky Post. And it was the whole, how did you become a judge, Harry? And he revealed that he was the only one home that day. That they needed to appoint, like, 15 judges. Everybody else was gone, and he was literally at the end of the list. He was the last one they were going to try, and he was the only one home. Everybody else was gone. That's how he became a judge. So it is with me and this job here. They offered it to everybody else.
We get a nice closet with no windows. and a folding Samsonite chair.
How would you like to work in a steamer trunk? I'd love it. Does it pay? Badly. All right. Hello there. It's 2 minutes and 8 seconds after the hour of 12 in this, the month of July in the year of our Lord, 2006. Thank you for coming by and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet minuscule studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio. It's a Rick Emerson show in beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon. Okay, it's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. If you'd like to get in touch with us electronically via the one of the interwebs, you can do that as well. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. The internet, which is, according to George W. Bush, is like a series of tubes. rick@rickemerson.com. All right, so there you go. And whatnot. In just a moment, we'll bring on... we've entered some bizarre new stage of the program where people now are calling at the very top of the hour for no readily apparent reason and presumably about nothing. That's fine. So before we get underway with all of that, what was I going to talk about? Well, it's lost to me now, so let's move on. Let's bring on Mailman Chris, official stenographer and recordist of the Rick Emerson radio program. Chris, how are you today?
Good, Rick, and yourself?
I'm dandy. Are you mailing today or are you just sitting around?
Not well. Both.
What?
This is lunchtime. So.
Oh, I see. But okay, because you work a rotating schedule, you mailmen.
Yeah.
When is your day off?
My day off this week was a couple days ago.
All right. But you were still able to pitch in, be the stenographer, keep us on the straight and narrow.
Of course.
God bless you, mailman Chris. All right. So here's the thing. I will list off the items. I will forward promote, as they say. I will guarantee some things that we're going to try to get to today. At the end of the program, I will owe a push-up to the community, to Sarah Dillon, for each item not gotten to. How many push-ups is currently owed by me, Rick Emerson?
22.
Are you sure that's right? I thought it was 21.
No,
that was the day before yesterday.
Oh.
It was 21 yesterday, and we had to go on for the double.
I forgot how the numbers go up when you add them like that. Okay. All right, well, here's what I'm trying to get to today. Today, we're going to have the inaugural edition. Only because it's got a deeply disturbing sounder that I did not create, that I am not responsible for. We're going to have the inaugural edition of the Rick Emerson. It seems so clumsy to call it the serial killer watch. But, you know, what else are you going to do? Snuff watch is already taken. It's not like it's a, you know, Gein watch. There's nothing else to call it. So we have the serial killer watch. I don't really like that name just because it seems like a bit of a mouthful. But we'll get to it. You know, it's close enough for jazz, as they say. So we'll get to the serial killer watch today, inaugural edition. How many clown watches do we have today?
Three.
Really?
We'll put them all into one.
A triple clown watch.
We have a backlog of clowns.
It's a pound of clowns. It's a something of clowns. Lisa Goddard may or may not. Wait, will she?
Lisa Goddard's definitely here. Roop is the one she hasn't heard from.
Lisa Goddard will be speaking to us from, I believe she is in Damascus. Yes, she is still in Syria. Jim Roop will most likely be joining us, but I'm not going to guarantee that one. Our good friend, The Low, will be here, hip-hop artist, the man who did Radio Gangster and the Emerson Army theme song. He'll be in the studio later on today. He's in Vegas. And we're going to play Spot the Fake Rap Lyrics, by the way. Later on, we will do Spot the Fake Metal Lyrics if we have time. We will also be doing Spot the Fake Rap Lyrics for a copy of The Low's new CD, as well as a pair of tickets to Rockfest 11, because those two things go together fantastically. Also, in the words of Tim Riley, we'll be getting to a lot of stuff that doesn't go together. Scott Daly will be here from FilmFeverRadio.com, and I think that's probably it. I don't feel comfortable guaranteeing anything else. All right, Chris, so do you have the things we're going to be getting through today?
Yeah, we got the inaugural serial killer, triple clown watch. I guess that'd be a Volkswagen bug full of clowns. Lisa Goddard, Jim Roop, which you're not guaranteeing, The Low, Spot the Fake Metal or Rap Lyric, and Scott Daly.
Fantastic. Excellent. And then we will check in with you at the end of the program and find out what I've gotten to, what I've not gotten to, and I will owe a push-up for each thing neglected.
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir. There you go. That's Mailman Chris.
I think you're going to be 100% today.
Really?
Well, yeah, since you didn't put the top five.
Wait, is this reverse psychology? Is this like you're trying to stress me out?
No.
Dude, you're going to score 100 points today. No pressure. And then you stare at me.
I have faith in you because all those things are already so set in stone that there's no way you can go awry.
Do you see how this is having the intended effect? There was a time when I would promote 10 things and get to one of them. But lately, I've been the only thing I've been dropping is the top five. And today, see, it's not just that I get to more. It's that I've stopped promoting things that I know there's not a snowball's chance in hell we're going to get to. It's made me a more responsible talk show host. So there you go. Let's get to it. Hello, Steve. You're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick. The only reason I called is kind of late now, but Harry Stone was the name of the judge.
Harry Stone. That is in fact, correct. Okay, Harry Stone. For bonus points, John Larroquette's character's name was?
I don't know. The only one I can remember is Bull, that big bald guy who dropped off the face of the earth.
Yeah, no, he was in Bull, Richard Mull. He was also in House, by the way, starring William Catt and Kay Lentz.
Well, speaking of old news, I was actually privy to two airplane crashes. There was one back in Cerritos in like 1986 or something like
that. I remember that one.
Cerritos, California.
Oh, Tim was there.
I was on the way to the San Diego Zoo that day.
Yeah, I was right there in the Cerritos neighborhood where the little Cessna went down. It went down to school like about a block away. So I got my little disc camera and went over and took pictures of
your disc.
The decapitated plane.
The disc camera. Was that Polaroid? Or no, it was Kodak. It was like a Kodak disc.
Yeah, it was a little Kodak thing with that horrible round film that went in it.
Yeah, that like Viewmaster film.
Yeah, but yeah. I still got some pictures. You can see blood all over the wings of the plane, and there's a hat that had half of a head still in it.
Jesus God! This program suddenly is taking a whole weird turn. Well, you just called up about night courts, and suddenly we're talking about halves of heads.
I called about this a long time ago, but my cell phone battery died while I was...
Okay.
Thought I would slip it. Oh, and an El Toro Air Base, a little World War II plane crashed into the chapel right after, a few minutes after everyone left.
Maybe you're just bad luck. Have you thought about that? Maybe you should stay away from planes.
I don't take planes. Let's put it that way.
All right. Thank you, Steve.
All right. Thank you.
All right. There you go. That's Steve.
Did I miss something?
That's old news.
Old plane crashes.
Okay.
There you go. Old news is so exciting. Old news from another state that no one here possibly could have witnessed. Had the half a head thing. He pulled it out there at the end. I didn't think I was going to care. He's like, I saw a plane crash 10 years ago in California, and I was just starting to mentally tune out and, you know, so thinking about, like, you know, what I was going to wear around the house tomorrow or something. And he's like, and there was a hat with half a head in it, and bam,
I snapped
right back to attention. All right. Okay, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, wait. What? I would normally talk about what I did last night. I didn't do anything. We're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and, I would guess, slightly hungover Sarah Dillon. How are you?
I'm a little tired. I'm good, though.
When you say tired, is that a little hungover?
No, not even really hungover, just really tired. My apartment's really hot.
Now, see, you know why it is? It's that bastard Manuel.
He's listening today. Don't say that.
It's, when I say bastard, that is, that's Latin.
A term of endearment.
Yes.
It's Latin for,
You meant to say best friend.
I think you meant to say a bitard, which is a French bread.
Yes. Yes, that loaf of bread, Manuel. Anyway, well, see, because this is... Now, you sleep with your door shut. Well, you've got to because of the dog, though, right?
Well, yeah, and I live with two guys.
And free roll.
Yeah.
You don't want them to... What? You don't want to wake up Linda Hamilton's son. One of them is just standing in the doorway, you know,
with
a rose
going,
in his teeth.
With a nightstick, licking your cheek while you're asleep.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, I have my fan going full blast, but that doesn't really do much.
No,
it just circulates the hot room.
I've talked about this before. The fans raise the temperature of a room. And we'll see. And we're not even... What is today? The 20-something? 27th? Yeah, we got another,
28th.
Like, you got another 2 months of this.
I know.
That's no good.
I'm just going to start sleeping in the living room, I think.
Well, why don't you just sleep at Nate's? Nate has an air conditioner, doesn't he?
He does.
Well, There you go. You don't
have
to live there.
From time to time.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to live there. You don't have to spend. You don't have to talk to him. Just go over after he's asleep. Crawl into bed, sleep there, get up before he awakes, and there you go.
Creepy.
Then it's like you're not even there, but you've still got the air conditioning. Or you could sleep in the living room, but that seems like it's going to present the same problems as you in the bedroom because you got two men living with you.
That's true.
Going to walk out and see your supine figure laying on the sofa there. So. But I've done that when the air conditioner in our bedroom wasn't working. I was totally sleeping out there in the living room. I'll take sleeping out in an awkward public place over sleeping in someplace else. There were times in my past when I considered sleeping at work. There were times that I did sleep at work. There were times, and Tim probably has these stories too, where I actually slept in the office because it was so hot at my apartment.
Wow.
And I would literally, that's the great thing about a radio station. It's always open. Somebody's always there. And the other thing about working at a radio station is, half of the people who work at a radio station are living below the poverty level, and their families have disowned them. And they've probably got a dependency problem of some kind. And so nobody bats an eye when you're sleeping in your office because, you know, it's just one other guy. Just somebody, oh, what's that? Somebody's sleeping in his office thinking, it's probably somebody sleeping in a promotions office at any given moment. So, I mean, I would encourage you to just come sleep here. That's what I would do.
I used to stumble over that sleeping goth woman at KOTK.
The goth woman? I think she just didn't know how to put on makeup.
No, there was this goth woman who used to be passed out in the production studio. It was the girlfriend of an all-night board op.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Monica.
This is a goth woman.
There was a goth woman at hold on. Was this at 1080 or 910?
1080 back at the old building.
There was a goth woman asleep in a studio?
Yeah, on Sunday mornings.
Was she with Clyde?
No, she wasn't with Clyde.
Was she with Todd?
I'm not sure, but it was a board op.
Well, whatever.
Used to work all night.
Sure, this is exciting for the people at home. Let's talk about people we used to see asleep in rooms. Ladies and gentlemen at the City Desk, here's Tim Riley.
And I saw a cat sleeping underneath my back porch the other day.
Tim's working on the following stories for you today.
Well, a Vermont man will get between 5 and 10 years in prison for stealing maple syrup. What else do we have here? A water gun fight ended with a boy stabbing a girl in the leg in Florida.
Oh. Okay.
The Catholic Church is struggling with a question of what to do with thousands of old nuns. And teens are getting high on mothballs today.
Okay. Well, there you go. We've dilly-dallied long enough. Oh, Scotty wants it to be another. Refrigerators also raise the room temperature. When you were a kid, did you ever just stand in front of the open freezer? Just, you're never not trying to freeze the whole house. And then you start to wonder why you couldn't just do that. It does seem like that should work. Speaking of which, did your refrigerator ever get fixed?
Well, it was temporarily fixed. I'm still waiting for the parts to come in.
Temporarily fixed, by which you mean?
He defrosted it with a hairdryer. And it has been working since he did that.
Okay.
And charged me I do have a slight warranty on it.
Okay.
So I'm waiting for the parts to come in from wherever they're made.
So now we've moved from talking about people who used to sleep in rooms. People I've seen asleep in rooms to parts in the mail from other places for home appliances. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time that we end this foolishness. Here's Tim Riley at the City Desk, personal favorite.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour. And now, from the City Desk, Tim Riley.
And I shook all the crumbs out of the toaster this morning because that needed to be cleaned too.
Man, you want to talk about shaking out crumbs?
This is how we build cubes.
The cum is spiking right now. I can hear it. This is what makes a P1. Dear manager, I was really a fan of your crumb talk this morning. Would it be possible to extend this into some sort of an elongated program? Or I have an idea for a weekend show focusing on things one has found in the bottom of a toaster oven.
Then I took the broom and I swept away the cobwebs. They're in the fence in my entryway.
Okay.
Well, hello again. This is a radio station, and welcome to it.
No, have you ever gone into the studio after something? And I hate to use Clyde as an example for this, but let's say Clyde. Like, because when we were at Max and Clyde would do Ground Zero on the weekends, you would come in and, man, it's like you would pick up the computer keyboard, turn it over, tap it out, and it was like you could assemble a whole bagel out of the crumbs that came out of there. Like, if you were able to put them back together, you could make 3 bagels and a good piece of rye bread out of the crumbs that came out of that keyboard. So, not that I'm implying anything. I'm really not implying, I'm just saying. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, here we go again, from the, where were we are? It's top of the noontime news.
You've completely lost it.
Let's get right to it, shall we?
And you, the best part is, you mangled the intro and you've got it written down on a piece of paper taped to the wall in front of you.
I know I did. Well, let's get right to it, shall we? This is our first Bank of Soundbite.
Okay.
The president says a brand new videotape from the leader of Al-Qaeda, apparently we kill one so there's a new one, isn't very good. Bush says Al-Qaeda's future vision is very, very negative.
Al-Qaeda's made it clear.
They need a mission statement.
About their vision for the future. And it's one that is exactly opposite to what the American people believe, and that is people ought to be free. Free to worship, free to speak their minds, free to participate in the process.
You know what Al-Qaeda needs? They need some sort of a poster that hangs on a wall that has a picture of an idyllic lake. Mm-hmm. And then below it something like, you know, like a cap terror, you know, and then just some inspirational phrase about striking fear into the hearts of millions. This is a tape from who? Al-Qaeda?
Yes.
And that's who, from who at Al-Qaeda now?
Oh, the new guy.
Are they just sort of like Amway? They just speak with one voice.
They all look the same.
Here's my thing about them and, is Osama bin Laden, is he even part of them anymore? Is this sort of like
I think he's a splinter group.
Is this like a Dennis DeYoung sticks sort of thing that's happening with them where there's, you know, like there's Al-Qaeda and then you think he's still part of it, but he's really not. He's got his own solo project going on now.
Well, we're not sure if they sing.
All right.
But we do know that the Steely Dan Road crew got pulled over and got a speeding ticket. This happened in Coburg, Oregon.
That crazy rock and roll life that Steely Dan leads.
Some equipment was a little late getting to the Steely Dan concert in the Couve last night. OSP stopped a truck hauling the equipment, speeding north of Eugene. The big rig clunked nearly 90 miles an hour on I-5. And the speed limit is 55.
Was that last night?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So if it's late, you know why.
Did anybody go to see? Well, when is the show? Is the show tonight?
It was last night.
The show was last night. Okay.
The driver got a ticket for $469.
All right. I think Scotty J went to. Hold on. Let's find out.
Scotty J. This is David Cassidy. I don't know what else to say except.
You're not going to amount to jack squat!
Scotty, please summon him to the studio.
Beam us up, Scotty.
End of message.
Welcome to the Rick Emerson Show, intern Scotty J.
How you doing?
Did you go to see Steely Dan last night?
Yes, I did.
Did they sing Pig?
They did.
Oh, I would have seen
Did
that.
They stand on stage in a wooden manner?
No, believe it or not, I know that it's not your favorite band of all time.
Yes, that's really an understatement.
Did anyone sing along when they sang Peg?
Yes, they did. Everyone sang to the whole night.
How many black people were in the audience, would you estimate? Would you say fewer than none or just none?
Believe it or not, fewer than none.
But
in the band, there were several.
Many of Steely Dan's best friends are black. Yes.
Yeah, and it was just.
Did they comment on the roadie speeding ticket?
Did they?
They did not. It was actually a really good show, though. He put on this kind of a Lawrence Welk act.
Okay. Oh,
so he was actually.
Yes, it sounds like a fantastic show.
What was funny about it is
Steely Dan and their champagne music.
It was a spoof.
Did the Lennon sisters come out?
You see, he would go, and that was the girl singing after he just jammed a huge rock song. It was a joke. It was
Steely
really
Dan
funny.
Doesn't jam anything. Steely Dan, in no way do they jam, in no way do they rock, in no way do they kick ass of any kind.
I think I should have, drug you to that concert.
No,
because it was incredible.
That would have resulted in you no longer being a part of the CBS radio
At the end of the concert, I was like, how come Rick doesn't like this? Why does he want bamboo shoots up his fingernails and whatnot rather than listening to Steely Dan?
No way. You were trying to get me to... Okay, all right. Would you rank it as better than, equivalent to, or worse than David Cassidy's performance?
I'd rank it as just... out of all the hundreds of concerts I've been to before, I would rank this in the top five. It was very, very good. Every song was a hit. It was unbelievable. It was.
You really ought. You know, you have a strong career in PR ahead of you because you speak like a flack all the time.
You totally do.
They are consummate entertainers. Every song is a hit. The audience sings along with the fiery determination that only this rock and roll icon can summon up. Just crap that means nothing.
Well, I caught myself humming. You know, a tune or two.
I caught myself tapping a toe, Rick.
That's right.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Ladies and gentlemen,
here's
Scotty J.
More music news for people of Scotty's ilk. A transient was arrested on accusations of identity theft after impersonating the co-founder of Alan Parsons Project.
Who would possibly...
This fellow from Troutdale.
What is that going to get you exactly?
Well,
I co-found. Hello?
55-year-old Michael Rogers told residents of the city of Troutdale that he was Eric Wolfson, who founded the band with Parsons in 1975 and tried to get them to give him money. According to investigators, Rogers offered several people new cars if they agreed to pay the luxury tax. He told them he would fly them to a place on his private jet. So he could pick up the car.
Yes, because I'm sure that there's nobody rolling in money like the co-founder of the Alan Parsons Project.
All right. So that's that.
Sarah, please now to sing me the hit singles by the Alan Parsons Project.
I have no
that's
idea.
What I'm saying. I don't even really
know. The only
thing
I know from the Alan Parsons Project is from whatever that movie is with Mike.
I have them on cassette at home.
Yeah, I don't even know that I could sing you
Scotty
really
would know.
Anything by the Alan Parsons Project.
I've never even heard anything by the Alan Parsons Project.
All I know, didn't he produce Dark Side of the Moon?
No,
that's like his claim
you're thinking
to fame.
Of Pink Floyd.
No, I understand that. But I think Alan Parsons produced Pink Side, Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd. And then he wore a triangle on his head on stage. That was the other thing about the Alan Parsons Project. They had metal, they were big believers in pyramid power.
You know, I had to have some great gokay to have that information.
The 70s are stupid. Really, yeah, to have that, I really should be wearing some, like, earth tones, yeah, and have, like, gray hair, and then be spending a lot of time talking about how, like, Black Oak, Arkansas rocked it out, you know, like, back in the day.
We need to move in the way of socialism. It's the newest thing.
Let's all play the tribal drum. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, George Michael is defending Cruising for Sex in a series of media interviews
and hit bless him.
After a high-profile expose caught him once again in a well-known London pickup spot. He said, quote, "I've been doing this off and on since I was a teenager and have never once seen violence," he told ITV.
Well, there you go. At least he's sort of embracing it.
"If I want to see violence or what I would call shameful behavior, the idea that women in clubs these days have to hold their hand over their drink of fear of being drugged is a lot worse. Please don't."
This is called defocusing, what he's doing here. George Michael, you were humping a guy in the shrubs on a stained mattress. Yes, but women in clubs, it's a shame with the drugging. That's a whole lot of look over here. Don't pay no attention to the jobless van driver that I was getting it on with in a shrub.
"Please don't tell me as a member of the straight community that I am taking risks. I know what I do and I am sorry." Sorry. But we should not be taking any questions like this from straight women in particular. What's he talking about?
I have no idea. He had me for a minute, now I just don't even know.
He said, "Most men, gay or straight, found attractive the notion of sex with no strings attached. I do not deserve criticism. What I don't respect from some, that some demand answers from me on this." But anyway, the whole interview is on my website.
Have they changed the rules for language in Britain?
I guess
because
so.
He's just making grammar and context up over there. There's participles,
it's like
Paul Rove
going wild.
Seriously, well, all right.
Well, then he's suing everyone involved with this except for Rupert Murdoch, whose newspaper did this.
Of course.
He's suing the unemployed van driver. What's he going to get? He's going to end up with a stained mattress.
Possession of the mattress completely. Look, I don't think anybody has any problem with a guy going out looking for a casual, no strings, whatever good time. I don't think that's the issue.
Right.
I think the issue is that you were with a hideous looking, that you're George Michael, you are rich and famous, and you're with a hideous unemployed van driver on a stained mattress behind a shrub in public. And, oh, by the way, you fell asleep at the wheel of your car like 80 times in the previous week and a half. I really think those are the issues. I would be disappointed if George Michael were not having lots of meaningless sex. That seems to be the whole point. I think we're just talking about, it's like with everything else, location, 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 sir. So those are my thoughts to you. Oh, wait, this Paul has an Alan Parsons Project observation. Hello, Paul.
Hi, Rick. Just wanted to clarify there. You were talking about Alan Parsons being for Pink Floyd. It wasn't Pink Floyd. It was the Beatles.
No, I think you're wrong about that.
No.
That was George Martin.
Yeah.
It was a part of a... He had some connection to the Beatles. I know it wasn't Pink Floyd.
Is this a George Michael interview?
Yes, the Beatles albums were all produced by George Martin, to the best of my knowledge.
Okay, you're probably right there. But
yes,
Alan Parsons did have some sort of connection to the Beatles.
He walks upright.
Okay.
He's carbon-based.
He's a descendant of monkeys.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Paul.
I stand corrected.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Now go sit in a corner and feel shame.
I feel much shame.
Okay.
Thanks, Rick.
Thank you, sir. All right, that's excellent. Good times. Okay.
That's not positive thinking radio.
No.
No, it's...
Let's go back to talking about crumbs. Is this Lisa Goddard? Okay. Now, what is her schedule, sir? Should we do this now?
Yeah, I guess we should. I forgot it was at 20.
All right. It's abrupt mood shift. Let's now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard, who is going to put an end to these shenanigans and our tomfoolery, at least temporarily. Lisa, how are you?
That's what I'm here for, to be the big giant buzzkill.
No, the day started off a bit wobbly, and it's only gotten more so. I think we were about 10 seconds in. We started a long discussion about the cast and characters of the TV sitcom Night Court. Then we veered off into...
Yes.
Do you know the name of John Larroquette's character on Night Court?
I don't remember, no.
In case another affiliate should be asking you this in between questions about Syria, it is Dan Fielding. Just so you know.
Of course it was Dan Fielding.
Of course.
Right.
And then we started talking about people falling asleep in radio stations. Then somehow we got into what connection Alan Parsons may have had to Pink Floyd. And the whole show just kind of exploded into a big pile of inanity.
Wow.
Yeah, it's
bad. Wow, and this is all sober.
Yes. Well, as far as you know.
It's true.
So you're in demand. Here's a question. Is this all very open-ended as far as how long you're going to be in... Two questions. How long you're going to be in Syria? And just as a side note, what kind of... I probably have asked you this before, but what kind of notice do you get? Do they literally call you home and like, do you have a bag packed all the time like Indiana Jones? Or like, you're on a plane in 20 minutes?
Yeah, you know, well, I've got my shipping out orders. I am coming back to the United States sometime next week, maybe Wednesday, maybe Thursday, it's not clear. And I'll get some combat training from CNN and then come back potentially to the region if things are
really
happening here.
What is that? Do you know what that combat training consists of?
Yeah, it's 5 days, you know, and I know people who have gone through it. They basically kind of fake kidnap you, put you through potential hostage situations.
Damn.
Do how to protect yourself and be aware how to deal with border crossings, hostile nations, all that good stuff.
That is, that is intense. Now, is this, again, not to be morbid, is this because of, I mean, to what extent do they view any of those things as a likely scenario, or is it just a little bit of wild speculation? In other words, they don't consider there to be any real chance of that happening, though, do they?
You know, I think in this part of the world, they know that there is that chance. You know, you never know when that's going to happen. You know, you can't predict it, and you can't predict when people in this part of the world are going to suddenly... their rage is going to turn into anger aimed at, say, the American embassy or the hotel you're at. And so they just want you to be prepared for you're going to be in an active theater of war.
And so after you do this combat training, are you going back to Syria, or do you even know where you're going back to at that point? Is it Syria?
I wouldn't know, but I could indeed come back. Yeah, and I think, you know, I do keep actually a bag packed for hurricanes. I have like a hurricane kit that I keep packed, but I did not have a Middle East conflict bag packed. And so,
well, live and learn.
I had a couple hours. I probably had 3 or 4 hours to get ready to come out here.
Fantastic. All right.
I wonder why they don't make Anderson Cooper wear a helmet. If they want people to be prepared.
Because they don't want to, because his hair is so perfectly coiffed, I don't think Anderson Cooper would let anybody touch his hair. I'm just speculating at this point. And
I can't speculate.
And give him nothing pleated. All right, so, we've just gotten dangerously far afield. Well, we're injecting levity. Is it true that they have tracked down the leader of Hezbollah today, that they know where he is?
You know, I have heard those rumors. I have not seen anything confirming that. You know, we've heard rumors, in fact, that he was here in Damascus. We've also heard rumors that he was at the Iranian embassy in Beirut. And honestly, I cannot confirm any of that. But clearly he is the man that Israel is looking for. He's sort of taken on his own mythology of his own.
And other than that, I mean, it is, not to make light of it, but it is really just the same old today. It is raining down the destruction from both sides
right.
today, and with no real end in sight. And I know that Condoleezza Rice is going back at some point to try to hash things out, but I guess we'll see how that...
She's playing the piano over there.
Yes, she's going to go with the power of music. She will be healing the region.
She's doing concerts. I hear Celine Dion is going to join her. And I think that is how they plan to stop the fighting. They'll be on the border with Celine Dion.
That should actually just be our threat, that if they don't knock it off, we're going to start saying, first Celine Dion will go over, then Jessica Simpson, then Lindsay Lohan. They're all going to go over one by one. And pretty soon we'll have to get the Backstreet Boys back together if they don't get their crap together over there.
They'll be in trouble.
All right.
So, you know, there was some developments today, though, that Hezbollah is launching a new rocket now. We've heard about the Katyushas again and again, but now they've got a rocket that can go much farther and has five times the explosive power of the last ones. They haven't hit anything with it yet. They flew maybe 3 to 5 of them but they went south of Haifa. Sort of a new phase. Really,
now, that is an interesting question. But so they unveiled this new rocket. Now is a dumb question, but if they just sort of unveiled it and said, "Hey, look at this brand new rocket that goes much further," where did the new rocket come from? Is that where Iran is just sort of handing it off to them when we're not looking? Where did it come from?
Right. What we understand about Hezbollah is that Hezbollah has been preparing for this kind of conflict for years, for 6 years that they've had Israel out of that area. And that they've been stockpiling these weapons, and that, you know, what you hear in the Arab world is they think Hezbollah has started out sort of light on Israel, and that now they're stepping up. Now we're going to see even more of their power. So who knows what's true? But it is clear that it seems Israel has underestimated Hezbollah to at least some degree.
Good Lord! All right. Well, to whatever extent you can, enjoy the next couple of days. And if we do not talk to you before you transit back, have a good flight, and we will talk to you soon, Lisa.
Okay, it's a deal.
All right, there you go, Lisa Goddard, CNN radio correspondent, currently in Damascus, heading for combat training soon. Good heavens. All right. Combat training, fake kidnapping. All right, that's a little hot. You have to admit it. All right.
Imagine somebody grabbing Larry King by the suspenders.
I'm out of here. 503-733-2970. The Rick Emerson Show continues next. It's AM 970 Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere. I ain't got a gun because I ain't Get in. It's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. Thank you for coming by. Coming up later on, Scott Daly from Film Fever Radio. Quite possibly Jim Roop. We'll do Spot the Fake Rap Lyrics. Our good friend The Low will be in studio. We got a pair of Rockfest 11 tickets. Copy The Low's new CD. All right. Are these Alan Parsons calls? Who could possibly care this much? All right. Let's see. Sid.
Yeah, Rick.
Hello, how are you, sir?
I'm good, yourself?
I'm rolling, brother. What do you got?
Well, Alan did actually work on Let It Be. He was the assistant engineer. He wasn't producer.
So he was basically just some guy who came in to bring, like, coffee.
Well, I wondered, engineer is like, we need more bass. Turn up the bass, you know? So what the assistant engineer does is,
The assistant engineer is just sort of there to give the real engineer somebody to yell at.
Right.
In case something goes badly.
He did later go and produce, I'm sure only because you're a Steely Dan fan, a album that you had to love, which is Al Stewart's Year of the Cat.
Oh, God, Year of the Cat. I'd forgotten all about that.
Year of the Cat.
Can never do that. Never do that again. Tim, you big Al Stewart Year of the Cat fan?
It's about 4 minutes and 32 seconds, I believe. A good bathroom break song.
When did you have to play that?
Well, that was pretty much standard for love song stations in the 80s.
Yeah.
That and All By Myself from Eric.
Oh, God, yeah, that. Oh, man, I remember having to play All By Myself for, like, love notes. Oh, terrible. All right, Sid, thank you.
Right, bye, Rick.
Thank you, sir. There you go. Okay, and lots of Cat Stevens records.
Oh, very young.
What the hell station? What the hell was I working that I had to play Morning Has Broken all the time? Morning Has Broken, which, for some bizarre reason, when I was I was like 13, 14, 15, I think it must have been when I was at Catholic school.
That was a big piano playing era.
And they did some rewrite of Morning Has Broken where it was like they turned it into a hymn, because they were trying to be, it was like that bad Disney film. Do you remember that bad Disney film with that band, The Shortcakes, where they made the band into like a Christian rock band? It came out in like 75, it was sort of like a Partridge Family knockoff. Am I the only one who remembers this film?
Yes.
Alright, but we had this one nun. When I went to school, he was just a total granola cruncher. And, just a hairy-legged, man-hating, just, you know, just very clearly like some hippie, trippy, left-wing lesbian type who became a nun to avoid the temptation of supple female curves. And, but as a result, she would always just shove her hippie garbage onto the rest of us. And, but one of the things she was always trying to do is to make Christianity hip. And here's the thing. Christianity, specifically Catholicism, is sort of cool to me because it's not hip. You know, Roman Catholicism, because it's like, you know, it's incense and stained glass windows and sort of Latin and sort of atonal weird chanting and very ritualistic. And it's not for me, but it's kind of cool. There's nothing worse. It's like seeing your dad wear like some sparkly shirt and say the word dog to you. You just don't want to be like, ah, you just don't want to see it. And that's what it is when the Catholics try to be really cool. And this nun would take contemporary, it sounds like a bad movie, would take contemporary pop songs of the time and would try to make them into sort of hymns for us to sing in church to be, so the kids would be down with God. And one of them was, this is how to touch she was, one of them was Cat Stevens. This is in 1989, by the way. She's like, no, the kids today, they love Cat Stevens. Let me take Morning is Broken and make it into a hymn. That reaped no rewards, by the way. Oh, here's yet another call about goddamn Alan Parsons. Hello, Brian?
Hey, Rick, how you doing?
You know, whoever thought I'd be talking this much about a guy I can't possibly stand?
Well, I wanted to clarify, Rick, Alan Parsons did produce Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd.
Ah, see, you bastards.
Well, there you go. And the one thing that he did that made that album super memorable was, if you remember the record, there
Triangle
was a part where...
The cover.
Am I breaking up here?
No, go ahead.
The part with all of the alarm clocks and
right.
The clocks go off at once, he went into a London clock shop and set all of those clocks up to do that and recorded that. So that's like his big...
Why do you know this?
I have a great idea.
How is it that you know this?
Because I'm an aging dweeb hippie rocker.
No, don't get me wrong. I'm right there with you, sir. That's like me knowing that sound at the beginning of 409 by the Beach Boys is the sound of Brian Wilson's car that they recorded out front of his house on Hawthorne at 2 in the morning. So, you know, and that his dad came out and beat him with a 2x4. So.
And I wanted to invite you guys down to the beer festival this weekend. You know about that, right? The beer fest, big one on the waterfront that's happening tomorrow.
Sarah just woke up.
Oh, no, I'm going to that tomorrow.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Uh-huh.
All right, great. Well, it's 72 beers and no drunk people.
I'll be standing in the sun in the gorge wearing a linen suit, so think of me.
With the thinning hair. Oh, sorry.
Okay, that's the end of the... Yeah, you're breaking up now. I'm sorry. We lost you. Sorry, it looks like your call is... Yeah, sorry.
Oh.
Bad phone. Thank you. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, with tens of thousands...
That was just unnecessary. There was no call for that. You know what that was?
I think he was insulting you. He was just trying to kind of distinguish you.
Yeah, thank you. You know, as it was gratuitous. That's the definition of gratuitous right there.
He's trying to bond with you.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
With tens of thousands of nuns over the age of 70, the Roman Catholic Church is facing a massive financial crunch. What are we supposed to do with all these nuns?
He has a massive financial crunch, seeing as either the single wealthiest corporation and organization and landowner in the history of civilized society.
No, billions of dollars has been salted away. There still remains an unfunded future liability of $8.7 billion for nuns, priests, and brothers in religious orders. The financial hole is projected by a consulting firm to exceed $20 billion by the year 2023. The sisters make up 82% of retirees, and they're especially vulnerable. Between 1965 and 2005, their numbers plummeted from close to 180,000 to only 68,000. So they don't have any young nuns out there working.
No, the average age, how many? None. The... I'm sorry, that really does call for the... thank you. The average age of a nun right now has got to be 50-something, at least.
If not more.
When is the last time anybody saw... Not that we're, like, hanging around at, like, a Catholic school a lot, but when is the last time anybody saw a nun that was under the age of 40?
I think Whoopi Goldberg, in a movie way back when, but she might have been older by then.
Yes, Scotty's noting the chicks want none of that. Yes, thank you. That joke has already been made, Scotty. Priests are the same way. I mean, the average age of priests is up there, because who wants to do that? I'd like to live in a hovel and never have sex. Well, okay.
Well, that isn't true.
Sign me. I'd like to never have sex with someone my same size.
I would never accept payola.
I'd like to never have sex that didn't involve chloroform and a gun.
An anti-immigration protest at the former WTC in New York City turned ugly when immigrants' rights activists broke through a police barrier. Jerome Corsi and Jim Gilchrist were promoting their new book, Minutemen, The Battle to Secure America's Borders, when a melee broke out. Number two.
Oh, I'm sorry. Melee.
Melee.
Hecklers are, they call themselves pro-immigrant advocates. I call them anti-First Amendment anarchists.
Meanwhile, on to Arizona we go. Didn't we used to have a sounder for Arizona?
Oh, I wasn't even listening.
Oh.
I've quit listening.
No, please don't.
I don't listen to hip-hop. Where are we going?
Arizona. Arizona, Arizona. You'll like this story.
Okay.
A man from Tucson is being hailed as a hero for lifting up a car to free a bicyclist. The cyclist, 18-year-old Kyle Holtrust, was struck when he pulled out in front of a car and got trapped underneath. Tom Boyle witnessed the collision and ran to help. Boyle was able to lift a Camaro up the boy.
Okay, now listen, I hear these stories all the time. This is like the beginning of the Incredible Hulk series back in the 70s starring Bill Bixby, where they say, Dr. Bruce Banner, a man in... Oh, I can't do the intro anymore, but blah, 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 source of strength
that all humans have.
I remember that line. This was... if you watch the Incredible Hulk TV series as opposed to reading the Incredible Hulk comic... Sarah, do you have any idea how in the comic the Incredible Hulk got his strength? Do you know the origin of the Hulk?
Nope.
Okay, it was one of the three things. One of the following three things. The Incredible Hulk in the comic book, Sarah, either he got his strength from A, being in a space capsule that circled an alien planet where he was bombarded with gamma beams, and thus it altered his cellular structure. B...
You seem disinterested already, even after A.
B... B, he was at a nuclear test facility where
a...
Where, no, it was B. Nuclear test
darn
facility.
Darn it.
Ah, in your face. But see, in the television show, it's different. In a television show, he is literally putting himself in like a chair and pressing a button and bombarding himself with gamma rays, trying to discover the inner source of, you know, physical strength that you hear about in these cases. And it starts off with a montage of, like, the woman, like, saving her child from a car by lifting it over her, you know, because you always hear those stories. It's a long way to get to my question, which is, this is crap.
Well, this
you always hear these stories.
Four.
Why is there never a camera when this happens? It's a burning car. You figure there's got to be somebody from K2 there filming it. Hey, there's somebody on fire. Get a camera, you know? And why is there never anybody there? Has this ever happened under laboratory conditions? Have they ever found a guy? Because this seems a lot like, no offense, Clyde Lewis territory to me, where you hear about a guy lifting a car.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't happen. This is like this is, you know, like that James Randi thing where they offer $1 million for anybody that can, you know, actually read somebody else's mind or predict the future or whatever. You always hear these stories about somebody able to have extreme physical strength under stress. And I mean, it's one of those things that I want to believe in, but it can't possibly be true. It's got to be. Is this from a British newspaper?
No, this is from Metro. The 6'4", 300-pound Boyle said the incident took an emotional toll on him.
300-pound Boyle.
The 6'4", 300-pound Boyle.
The whole story of human endeavor and saving the life of a loved one has just been reduced to us joking about the pimple. Thank you. Okay.
It's number three.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't even realize there was sound.
Yes, there is.
Best show ever.
Three.
I'm pretty worn out. It scared me. I have never been that scared in my life. You know, I was too close to death. So, I mean, I don't want to ever be there again. But if I have to, I will.
He's Superman.
So what happened?
He lifted the Camaro off the boy. The boy lived happily ever after.
And how old was the boy?
12, 13, 14.
And how did the boy get underneath the Camaro?
He rode in front of the car.
So this guy was driving along and hit a 12-year-old with a Camaro?
No, he didn't do it. He was a passerby who saw the incident occur.
Oh, okay, I see. So a Camaro
was... He's the hero.
A Camaro was driving by, hit the kid, and our friend Boyle saw it and said, I have to help, and lifted a Camaro off a child.
Mm-hmm.
Camaros are heavy. That's not a fiberglass car. That's a steel-bodied car.
300. I know.
That doesn't matter.
It's a wonder.
It's made up. That's what it is.
Well, let's have another Arizona story since we're already there.
Where?
Arizona.
Arizona, Arizona.
This is what's known as a TSL builder.
Is it more crumb talk?
No, something even
let's
better.
Let's discuss the carpet fibers in the studio.
Well, you're close. Phoenix residents aren't big on ironing, but people in Dallas and Cleveland press to impress. Now, this latest survey by the Fashion Institute of Technology says Phoenix leads the country in ironers who have a firm grasp on the importance of the task.
They seem to be ironing on the go, and they seem to be in quite a hurry when they do it. I guess that's why they iron their clothes while they are wearing them.
They iron their clothes while they're wearing them.
That seems really
well,
smart.
Well, Phoenix is pretty hot. I mean, it's like you're living in steam anyway, so it must be easier.
I mean, what's the point? If you're living there or in a place like Florida, what is the point of ironing? Don't you just walk outside and insta wrinkle?
Maybe so.
Let's hear that one again. Listen to how unbelievably disinterested. Well, this is a woman who has had the life beaten out of her.
This is Ingrid Johansson, a professor of textile development for the Fashion Institute of Technology.
A professor of textile. I'm not saying that's not a job that needs to be done. It is, clearly.
Not everyone can be a CNN correspondent in dangerous places in the world.
My question about this really is,
yes.
How do you end up... That's like 4, 5, 6 years at college, it would seem to me.
To understand the nature of textiles?
And their development?
There's a lot to it.
How do you end up picking that as your major is my question. I'm not saying it's not a worthwhile job. But there's a lot of worthwhile jobs that you can't fathom how they got from being like a six-year-old girl that wanted to run for president or be a princess to being what in textile development?
Mm-hmm.
The professor.
They seem to be ironing on the go, and they seem to be in quite a hurry when they do it. I guess that's why they iron their clothes while they are wearing them.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Meanwhile, Ingrid Johansson says people have to become more interested in ironing their clothes.
The benefits are great because it's less wear and tear on your clothing, and in fact, it's a job well done by yourself, and it's less money if you think of the cost of gas and going to take your clothing to the dry cleaner.
Meanwhile, a Vermont man is accused of stealing maple syrup and faces 5 to 10 years in prison.
I am staggered by Ingrid Johansson. I just can't get over that.
See, I didn't think you'd be interested in this.
No, it is unbelievable.
There are more sound bites that we didn't use from her.
Really?
Yeah.
Are there more?
Yes.
Wait, are they in the Metro?
Phoenix Iron. Yes. PHS
Iron. Oh, wait, I'm in the W folder. Is it audio?
Yes.
Phoenix Iron.
PHX.
Okay, I'm looking.
Iron.
Wait, I got to go back up.
Iron.
Okay.
And we didn't play three. We didn't play four or five.
All right, hold on.
No, we didn't play two, four, or five.
Phoenix ironing. Wait, hold on. Phoenix. Mm-hmm. Phoenix. Oh, wait, here we go.
We didn't play two, four, or five.
I really have no idea why Phoenix ended up as low as it did, but certainly maybe because they don't have the right iron, or they don't
Kill
know
me.
How easy it is, or they don't have proper tools to do the job.
What? I feel so sad for this woman.
This is her 50 minutes of fame. She is the professor of textile development and marketing for the Fashion Institute of Technology.
How do you land a man if you're this woman? I mean, I guess you can iron really well. I guess his clothing will always be crisply pressed, but still.
Anyone who wants to iron on a sidewalk certainly has not been taught that by their mother. or an airport counter.
What prompted that question? That answer.
Well, she says respondents showed creativity in their choices of ironing surfaces in Phoenix.
Anyone who wants to iron on a sidewalk certainly has not been taught that by their mother or an airport counter.
Okay. And what's the final cut?
This young lady says she's not surprised. 70% of Phoenix residents iron their jeans.
Jeans are now not so much casual wear. They're kind of that semi-business wear. So people wear them day in, day out, and they wear them 7 days a week, and it goes from the daytime activities into the evening activities, and I think people want to look as good as possible. And
this woman sits in a small, windowless, airless room with a single potted plant in the corner.
A humorless woman with three cats.
I was just going to say, petting a cat that's sitting in her lap and wishing that she would die. That's what Ingrid Johansson spends her day doing. Now I'm looking through these, I'm looking through all of these sound cuts. They're no lie. Okay, let me just tell you this. I'm looking at the sound bank here, and every day, you know, you hear us pick some of these bits.
I'm pretty worn out.
Like that, and
Al-Qaeda's made it clear.
You know, all of these. Mm. I'm looking through the bank, though, of sound we have to choose from, and no exaggeration. I'm looking here, and Tim, would you agree, without exaggeration, there are probably 1,000 news cuts here?
Yeah.
Probably at least hundreds and hundreds. Let's see what this one is. Okay. I don't even know what some of these are.
Big Willie Styles already.
Okay. You gotta go through those little ruts every once in a while. You know, I mean, there have been some CNI hits and some.
Al-Qaeda's made it clear.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what some of these are. Wait, hold on. How about this one? Let's see what this news cut from Metro is. Why we would need this.
Well, that's preparing for the future.
Is that
that day when her lifeless body is found in a deserted room somewhere in Skid Row? That's known as the future file. You just tag the date of death at the end of it. It's in there for when we need it.
Yeah, they've already got the Chiron made.
Uh-huh.
It just says like 2000 blank.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
just waiting for the guy to go 9, enter.
That's what that's for. That's the business I'm in. Talking about death.
Scotty is noting that we need an Aunt Jemima sounder every time there's a syrup story. Oh, God. Max, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick, how you doing? First time caller, man. I love your show.
Ow. Hello, sir. How are you? I'm fantastic. Thank you for calling.
That's infectious enthusiasm.
Yeah, so, oh, God.
What is that?
Phone's trying to kill my... I'm sick of being abducted.
I have no idea what's going on.
Well, I don't know if Beaverton has a lot of aliens, but I'm standing out in the parking lot right now looking at the hometown buffet, and I think it's trying to kill me.
Oh, okay.
There you go. I'm sitting in one spot in the middle of the parking lot right now. Now I can actually hear you.
By a buffet.
By a buffet.
I think Max is a little crazy.
Man.
Pardon me?
It is the weirdest day on the face of the planet. My pants just ripped like a minute ago after I got on the phone with you. Like, they literally just busted in half.
I don't think
in the middle of this parking lot talking to you with my pants ripped in half.
Attention, Scotty J, flag that, please. I don't understand anything that's going on.
That belongs in the Loznick song.
Seriously. Why are you calling us, sir?
Oh, so you were talking about how people can, like, lift cars when they have a lot of adrenaline in their body? Well, it happened to me once.
You sound like you've got a lot of adrenaline in your body, right? You've been doing some car lifting? You sound a little pumped up right now.
I've been lifting heavy boxes all day.
Okay.
So one time, my friend had a parked car and it rolled on his foot, literally crushing his foot. So I just basically grabbed the car and picked the car up a couple of inches and he got his foot out from underneath it. And then afterwards I had so much adrenaline I had to sit down. So it is possible to do it, babe, and I've done it myself before.
What kind of car was this?
It was like a Ford Ranger, like a regular old Ford Ranger.
And you were able to lift it enough for him to get his foot out.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. All right.
It's happened to me before.
All right. Well, okay. Thank you, Max.
No problem.
All right. There you go. I'm talking to Tim Savage. You can just start to sweat just talking to him. All right. Tim Savage, who hosts Timnasium, or as the voice guy said last week, Timnasium. By the way, that will not be airing this weekend. He's going to be at Rockfest because he's KFO guy. But Rockfest, for which we'll be giving away tickets. You talk to Tim Savage, though, and it's like talking to a human capacitor. It's just energy coiled up. Like, at any moment, you expect that guy just to spring for your throat, you know, and with a cackling, maniacal, joker-like laugh as he rips out your larynx. It's very unnerving. That's kind of what Max reminded me of now. And what was that business about his pants ripping while he was standing outside a buffet?
I don't know. He wasn't making any sense.
I think you see a lot of that in the suburbs.
I can put down some more ham. Okay.
I heard they serve free breadsticks here.
Okay. Let's take a look forward, shall we, and see what else is coming up on the Rick Emerson program.
A Colorado killer details gruesome murders.
Is this our inaugural serial killer watch?
A moose is missing and presumed eaten. And a water gun fight ends with the boy being stabbed.
Fantastic. Where?
Florida.
Excellent. All right. So that's all coming up. We also have seen a radio correspondent, Jim Roop, we believe. Our good friend, The Low, will be joining us in the studio later on. We'll play Spot the Fake Rap lyrics for a copy of his new CD and a pair of ticks, as they say, to see Rockfest 11. It's one more happening tomorrow and whatnot. Okay, Scott Daly's going to be in later on as well from PhilFeverRadio.com. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Solid State Radio.